From the moment Elena whispered, "I believe in you," David felt invincible. He built a life around her faith, convinced his dreams were hers too. But loyalty is a fragile gift, and in Elena's hands, it would become a weapon. Subtle shifts in her voice, tiny reminders of his debts, and sudden cold silences began to erode his confidence. When love becomes leverage, trust becomes currency. And every "I need you" carries a price. Elena's loyalty was only a beginning, not the end. She was leading David into a maze where love turned into control. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1. The Foundation. The rain had a way of making everything feel cinematic. David always believed that, as he stood under the awning of Fenwick & Son's rare books, watching the drizzle draw rivers down the windowpane. He had no idea. His life was about to split clean down the middle. Until then, he'd always thought of love as something simple, a choice, a promise you kept, even when it wasn't easy. That day, he was thumbing through a dusty monograph on post-war minimalist architecture. Something in the angle of sharp corners against soft lighting calmed him. He was 2 years out of grad school, trying to make it as a freelance designer in a city that didn't care how brilliant you were unless someone famous said so. Then she walked in. Elena. Umbrella closed. Black coat damp. Lips painted like rusted copper. She wasn't loud. She was composed, calculated, but her eyes were something else entirely. Like she'd already lived 1,000 lives and knew exactly how each one ended. "You like Niemeyer?" she asked, nodding to the book in his hands. David blinked, caught off guard. Most people didn't even recognize the name. "Yeah," he said. "His work makes the future feel possible, even in concrete." She smiled, as if he'd passed a test he didn't know he was taking. They stood there, talking for 20 minutes, then an hour. The rain slowed outside, but David didn't notice. She told him she was a psych major turned grant writer. She worked for a nonprofit that helped underprivileged youth navigate mental health care systems. David said he admired that. She tilted her head. "I admire your passion. You talk like someone who actually wants to build the world better." That was the first hook. He didn't know it then, but that sentence would echo in his mind for years. "You talk like someone who wants to build the world better." It made him feel seen in a way no one else had. He asked for her number. She didn't hesitate. They fell hard. Within 3 months, they were inseparable. Dinners turned into overnight stays. Overnight stays into full weekends. David wasn't used to this kind of connection. Elena paid attention. She noticed when he was quiet. Asked questions that cut deeper than surface chatter. She remembered everything. When his freelance income hit a dry spell, Elena insisted on covering more dinners, more groceries. "You're investing in your dream," she said. "I'm just making sure you don't burn out before you get there." That, too, felt like love. She would send him texts during meetings. "Don't let the world dim you. You were born to build monuments. I believe in you, even if no one else does." David never had someone advocate for him like that. Not his mother. Not even his ex-girlfriend, who once called his architecture obsession boring at best. With Elena, he felt electric. He began reshaping his life around her encouragement. Every time he won a client bid or got published in an architecture blog, her praise was the drug he didn't know he needed. But little things started to shift. It began with a forgotten dinner reservation. David had been swamped with a deadline and lost track of time. When he called to apologize, Elena's voice was cool, distant. "I just feel like I always make time for you," she said, "even when my world's falling apart." He apologized, profusely, made up for it with flowers, her favorite wine, and tickets to an art exhibit. She kissed his cheek and whispered, "You're lucky I know how much pressure you're under." Most women wouldn't be this understanding. At first, it sounded like grace, like patience. Later, it would feel more like guilt served with a smile. 6 months in, Elena moved in. They told themselves it was practical. Why pay rent on two places when they spent every night together anyway? The first week was bliss. She made breakfast with jazz humming from a Bluetooth speaker. She reorganized his bookshelf by subject and color. She even framed one of his old student designs and hung it in the living room. But when David hung his favorite vintage poster in the hallway, she paused. I don't know, she said, wrinkling her nose. It clashes with everything else. Let's try something that matches the flow of the space. He didn't argue. After all, she had an eye for harmony. And it was just a poster. Just a poster. Over time, Elena began offering feedback on his work. At first, it was helpful. Thoughtful critiques on how he presented to clients. Small tips on how to structure his pitches. But it evolved. "That font makes you look amateur," she'd say, scanning his presentation. "You're not some intern. Show up like a professional." Or, "You shouldn't share this concept yet. It's not your best. Wait until you've refined it more." Sometimes he agreed. Sometimes he didn't. But when he pushed back, Elena would go quiet. Not in anger, but in disappointment, like he'd broken an unspoken bond. "You always said you wanted to be the best," she whispered one night. "I just want you to get there. Don't shut me out." David would end up changing the design. By the end of their first year, David had adopted her voice in his own head. He didn't realize it yet, but Elena's love had shifted into something else, something hungrier. Her encouragement, once so radiant, now had a shadow beneath it. Praise came after correction. Affection followed obedience. She didn't yell, she didn't shame. She guided, with a steady hand, with surgical precision, with the voice of someone who made you feel like you were betraying love itself, if you dared to say no. Still, he loved her. Of course he did. Because when she looked at him across the dinner table and said, "You're everything I ever wanted," he believed it, even as his dreams slowly reshaped themselves around hers, even as his autonomy gave way to her agenda, even as the person he once was faded into a version of himself that only existed in Elena's mirror. Chapter 2, The Shift. David was designing a private museum for a new client downtown. It was his biggest commission yet, and he wanted it to be perfect. He'd been working late, sometimes through the night, sketching curved stairwells that wrapped around natural light wells, calculating spatial flows, layering concrete with glass in a way that felt almost spiritual. He was proud of the work, but Elena wasn't impressed. When she saw the first renderings, she frowned. "It's too exposed," she said. "That staircase makes the building feel vulnerable." David tilted his head. "It's meant to. It's about light and transparency. A museum should invite the outside world in." Elena smiled. "You're so idealistic. That's why I love you. But the world isn't soft, David. It's sharp. You've got to design for power, not poetry." It wasn't just feedback anymore. It was framing. As if she understood him better than he understood himself. He shrugged it off. He still had final say. But when he presented the concept to the client a week later, he found himself adjusting the pitch based on her words. By the end of that meeting, he had changed the staircase and hated himself for it. That same week, something else changed. They went to a dinner party hosted by Elena's colleague. A high-end affair, rooftop views, curated cocktails, jazz quartet playing softly in the background. Elena fit right in. Her dress was minimalist, but flawless. Her conversation magnetic. David, on the other hand, felt like an accessory. When he tried to speak about his project, she jumped in. David's brilliant, but a bit of a perfectionist. She laughed, brushing his arm. I keep telling him, clients don't want soul, they want results. People chuckled. David smiled politely, but inside something twisted. That night, as they rode the elevator down to their car, he tried to talk about it. Elena, do you think sometimes you speak for me too much? She turned to him, face softening. Baby, she said gently, I was just helping you relax. You overthink everything. I was trying to keep it light. He didn't know how to argue with that. It wasn't cruel. It wasn't malicious. And yet, it chipped away at something fragile inside him. Back home, Elena lit candles in the living room and poured them wine. Don't take everything so personally, she whispered. You get sensitive when you're stressed. He nodded. Let it go. Again. Because when Elena comforted him, it always came with a side of correction, a whisper of what he should have done better, a reminder of how she was saving him from his own flaws. It didn't feel like control. It felt like love, until it didn't. Later that month, David's sister called. She wanted to visit for the weekend, just her, maybe her fiancé. They hadn't seen each other in months. David was excited. Of course, he said, you can stay here. But when he mentioned it to Elena, her reaction was careful. She's sweet, Elena said, but it's been a really stressful month for both of us. Maybe we need a quiet weekend instead. David hesitated. She's my sister, Elle. I know, she said, sliding closer to him on the couch, but I've barely had time with you. And when she comes, it's all about her, isn't it? He didn't answer. Elena stroked his cheek. Just tell her it's not the best time. She'll understand. So he did. And afterward, his sister was polite, but distant. Something in her voice had shifted. He hated that he noticed it. Hated more that he still chose Elena. Over time, isolation came cloaked in good intentions. They stopped seeing old friends. They're not on your level anymore, Elena said. You're growing, they're not. They stopped going to certain events. You said crowds overwhelm you, remember? I'm protecting your energy. She started handling more of his emails, more of his scheduling. You're too busy creating to worry about logistics. Let me help. At first, it was a relief. Then it was a routine. And eventually, it was a trap. One night, David got a call from his former mentor, Professor Keyes. Keyes had been his advisor in graduate school and one of the few people who truly pushed him without undermining his instincts. Keyes had read about David's museum project in a design magazine and wanted to reconnect. You're doing great things, he said. Let's grab lunch. I'd love to hear what's driving your process. David was thrilled. He hung up and turned to Elena. But before he could speak, she said, Was that Keyes? He blinked. Yeah, he wants to meet up. She raised an eyebrow. That's interesting after all this time. David shrugged. He saw the museum press, wants to catch up. Elena didn't respond at first. She stood quietly, arms crossed. Then softly, Just be careful. People only reach out when they see something in it for them. David frowned. He was my mentor. Sure, until you stop being useful to him. Now that you're making waves, he's back. That's not coincidence, David. That's strategy. The next morning, David canceled the lunch. It wasn't just people she filtered. It was his own intuition. She rewrote his instincts in real time. When he said he was unsure about taking on a corporate high-rise project, Elena said, You always sabotage your own success. This is what real money looks like. When he said he wanted a break to recharge, she said, So you're going to throw away momentum because you're tired? When he said he missed his sister, she said, Then why hasn't she reached out again? Each time he swallowed the conflict, each time he told himself she had a point, because she didn't yell, she didn't fight dirty. She just made him doubt himself. Slowly, completely. One night, David sat alone on the balcony, sketchbook in his lap, but no lines on the page. The city buzzed below, headlights weaving through the dark. Inside, Elena was watching a documentary, the soft hum of dialogue filtering through the open window. David stared at the blank page. He couldn't remember the last time he'd drawn something just for himself. Not for a client. Not for Elena's approval. Just for him. That scared him more than anything, because loyalty had once been his compass, his promise. Now, it felt like his prison. And still, when he walked back inside and sat beside her on the couch, she curled into his side like nothing had changed. Because for Elena, nothing had. She was still the same woman who once told him she believed in him. Only now, that belief came with conditions. Chapter 3. The Cracks in the Mirror. The first message came as a surprise. Still sketching in the dark? Or did you finally let some sunlight in? Ava. David hadn't heard from Ava in over 2 years. She was his old studio partner from grad school. Brilliant, blunt, and the only person who ever challenged him creatively without ego. Back then, their friendship flirted with something deeper. But life moved on, and Elena moved in. David drifted. Or maybe he was pulled. He read the message twice, smiling despite himself. It had the same bite, the same warmth. He stared at it for a long time before typing back. Mostly dark, but I still remember what light looks like. They met for coffee 2 days later. It was supposed to be brief, friendly, catch up on life, projects, old classmates. But once Ava sat across from him, curly hair tucked into a hoodie, notebook filled with scribbles under her arm, David felt something he hadn't felt in a long time. Honesty. "I saw your museum design," she said, "and I recognize some of your soul in it, but not all." David blinked. "What do you mean?" Ava leaned in. "It's good, polished, executed, but it doesn't breathe. It's like watching a dancer who's memorized every step but forgot why they're dancing." The words hit like a chord struck too hard. "I've been distracted," David said. Ava raised an eyebrow. "You mean her?" He nodded slowly. "Elena," she said flatly. A pause. "You never used to flinch when someone challenged your vision," Ava continued. "Now you defend choices like someone told you what they're supposed to be, not like you believe them." David looked down at his cup, the coffee long gone cold. Later that night, back home, Elena noticed something different. "You're quiet," she said, curling beside him in bed. "I ran into Ava," he said, testing her reaction. Her body stiffened just slightly. "Ava, your old classmate?" He nodded. "We had coffee." A long pause. "She always had a thing for you," Elena said, voice cool. "No, she didn't." Elena looked at him. "I can always tell women like her don't reconnect just to say hi, especially not after you're doing well." David's jaw tightened. "We were just catching up." She leaned closer, tracing a finger down his arm. "You know I trust you," she whispered. "But not everyone has your heart. Some just want a piece of your spotlight." Her touch lingered. Her tone softened. "I just don't want anyone pulling you off track." The next week, David found himself sketching again. Not for a project, not for a pitch, just shapes, forms, feelings, the way he used to, before everything needed approval. He hid the sketches, not because they were secret, but because he wasn't ready to hear Elena's opinion. That was the first time he realized he was afraid of her judgment. And once you're afraid of the person you love, something inside you begins to rot. Ava texted again. Simple. "You okay?" He replied, "Not sure." That weekend, they met at a gallery. One of their old professors had a new exhibit opening. David was nervous, but it felt good, real. Ava laughed loudly, challenged everything, saw through him without trying to fix him. "Do you even know what you want anymore?" she asked quietly. He didn't answer. Instead, he asked, "Why now? Why reach out?" She shrugged. "Because I saw your name in lights, but your voice sounded missing. And because I missed the version of you that wasn't afraid to be wild." David looked at her. "You think I'm afraid?" Ava didn't flinch. "I think you've been trained." That night, he didn't tell Elena where he'd been. Not because he was hiding anything, but because she would find a way to make him feel guilty for being free. When she asked, "Busy day?" he just said, "Yeah, a lot to think about." And that was true, because something was shifting, not just in his schedule, but in his spine, in his silence, in the way his loyalty no longer felt like a virtue, but a leash. The breaking point came a few days later. David received an email from an international design collective. They wanted him to lead a panel at an upcoming architecture summit in Madrid. It was a huge honor. He read it 3 times, heart racing. When he told Elena, her reaction was not what he expected. "Oh," she said, "Madrid, that's short notice." "It's in 3 weeks," she hesitated. "That's right when I launch my youth therapy initiative. You said you'd be here." "I didn't know this was coming." She nodded slowly, then smiled. "Of course, I'm happy for you. But you'll be gone for a week, right when I need you most." David looked at her. "Elena, this is my field. This matters." "I matter too." Her voice was soft, but her eyes, sharp. He didn't know what to say. She touched his hand. "We can talk about it tomorrow." But he knew what that meant. Sleep on it. Let her reshape it. Wake up with a different view. One more aligned with hers. That night, David couldn't sleep. He walked into his studio, opened his sketchbook, and there, scribbled in the corner of one page from earlier that week, was a quote Ava once wrote on their classroom whiteboard. "Don't design from fear. Build from belief." David stared at the words. Then, slowly, deliberately, he pulled out his laptop and booked a flight to Madrid. Chapter 4, The Counter Move. The email confirmation sat open on David's screen like a silent rebellion. Flight to Madrid, confirmed. For the first time in months, he felt light. Nervous, yes, but alive. This summit wasn't just a speaking engagement. It was a signal to himself that he still had a voice, that he wasn't just someone else's shadow. When Elena came home that evening, the air was electric with unspoken words. She kissed him on the cheek. "You cooked?" she asked, glancing at the salmon sizzling on the stove. "Yeah," he said, "felt like doing something simple." She poured herself wine, leaned against the counter, and watched him. "You've been different lately," she said. David stirred the pan. "How so?" "Quieter, distracted, and you've been drawing again." That last part wasn't a question. It was a statement. Observed, stored, filed. He nodded. "Yeah, I needed to." Elena sipped her wine. "You used to share everything with me." David turned off the heat. "Some things I needed to keep to myself." That silence between them was no longer safe. It was war. After dinner, Elena curled into his side like always, but her breathing was too slow, too even, like she was calculating something beneath the surface. "You haven't told your parents about Madrid yet," she said softly.
"I will."
"They'll be proud," she added, then paused. "But they'll probably ask why you're going alone."
David stiffened. "What do you mean?"
She looked up at him. "I could come with you, be your support. You always say I ground you." He hesitated. I think I need to do this by myself. Her smile didn't quite reach her eyes. Right, of course. But he could feel the temperature drop between them. The next morning, David woke to find his calendar synced with new appointments, all from Elena, therapist meetings, networking brunches, follow-ups for projects he had already shelved. When he confronted her, she shrugged. You've been overwhelmed. I was trying to help you stay on track. I never asked you to manage my life, he said. You're spiraling, David. I can feel it. You're pulling away, and I don't know what you're listening to, but it's not your best self. She didn't raise her voice. She never did. She redirected. She concerned. She cared. But every word was a rope, pulling him back into her version of his life. That evening, she made his favorite dinner. The wine was uncorked before he got home. The jazz playlist was playing. Candles flickered low. She wore the silk robe he loved. Let's reset, she said gently. Come back to us. David wanted to resist, but routine is a powerful drug. He kissed her, touched her, let himself be folded back into the comfort of knowing someone. But even as her body moved with his, her words echoed. Don't let them pull you away. Don't forget who stood by you when you were nothing. Don't become someone else's man. 2 days later, Elena invited David to a small dinner with some of her friends. She framed it as a low-pressure evening. You need a break from all the tension, she said. He agreed, reluctantly. It was four people, wine flowing, laughter on loop. But something in the air was off. One of the women, Marla, leaned in during dessert. So, Madrid, huh? She said. David blinked. How do you... Elena told us, so proud of you. Though she said it's probably just a stepping stone. You're not ready for the big leagues yet. David's jaw tightened. He glanced at Elena. She smiled, sipping her wine like nothing had been said. Another guest chimed in. She's your rock, man. You're lucky. Most guys like you get reckless once they taste success. The words stung because they weren't casual. They were planted. Elena had been spinning the narrative already, framing him as fragile, ambitious, but in need of her correction. Later that night, David confronted her. What did you tell them? She shrugged. Only the truth. That you're talented but overwhelmed, that you've been emotional lately. I'm not your patient, Elena. She stepped forward, calm. Number, you're my partner, and when I see you making impulsive decisions, booking international flights without discussing it, I worry. He stepped back. You worry, but only when I act without your permission. Elena's expression shifted. For the first time, there was something cold in her eyes. You think I'm trying to control you? David didn't answer. You're not ready, she said. You're not as strong as you think. That night, he slept on the couch. And for the first time in their relationship, he locked the door behind him. The days that followed were a blur. Elena oscillated between tenderness and cold war. She made breakfast one morning, left silently the next. She texted him hourly, then ignored his replies for hours. It was punishment dressed as unpredictability, control disguised as concern. The worst manipulation wasn't the screaming. It was the almosts. Almost love, almost kindness, almost safety. 3 nights before Madrid, Ava called. I saw your name on the conference list, she said. Yeah, David replied. You going?
I booked it.
Are you going to show up, though? The real you? David didn't answer. Ava paused, then said, Whatever she's doing to you, it only works if you stay quiet. Then she hung up. That night, Elena knocked softly on the studio door. I miss you, she said. David looked up from his sketches. Her voice cracked. I just... I feel like I'm losing you, and I don't know why. I did everything right. I believed in you.
He studied her. Elena, he said slowly, you didn't believe in me. You believed in the version of me you could manage.
She stepped back, wounded. I gave you everything, she whispered.
No, he said. You traded for everything.
Silence. And then the tiniest shift in her expression. That mask slipping just for a moment. Chapter 5, Strings Across the Sea. The jet engine hummed beneath David as he watched Boston shrink into clouds. Rain streaked the window, turning the city into a blur of light and memory. He didn't say goodbye to Elena in person. She wasn't home when he left for the airport. Just a note on the counter. I hope this trip makes you feel something again. Be safe. Be smart. Come back to me. Elena. It should have read like love. Instead, it felt like surveillance. Still, he was gone now. Thousands of miles between them. And for the first time in a long time, he could breathe without waiting for someone else to tell him how. Madrid was gold in the daylight. David arrived a day before the conference and checked into a small boutique hotel near the Prado. The streets were alive with color, the air dry and charged with motion. He walked for hours that evening, past plazas, past fountains, past strangers who didn't know him and didn't want to shape him. He felt invisible, and in that invisibility, powerful. The conference was a vortex of brilliance. Architects from Brazil, Germany, Morocco, all pitching designs that bent steel into stories. David presented his museum design to a packed room. He spoke clearly, confidently. And when they clapped, it wasn't polite applause. It was real. Afterwards, people came up to him, some offering opportunities, others just sharing admiration. One woman from Johannesburg said, "There's so much softness in your structure. Like, you're not afraid to be emotional with concrete." David smiled. That night, for the first time in a year, he slept without grinding his teeth. But on the third day, Elena called. He stared at the screen. Elena, 7 missed calls. 13 messages, 2 voicemails. He didn't open them, not right away. Instead, he sat on the edge of the hotel bed. Hands trembling, heart racing. She hadn't let go. Of course she hadn't. He finally opened the last message. "I saw the photos. You looked different. Who was that woman next to you with the braids? Interesting. Thought you came alone." The photo was from a panel recap someone had posted on Instagram. David hadn't even noticed who was standing next to him. He texted back, "Elena, please don't do this. I need space." Seconds later, her reply came. "I give you everything. One boundary and you call it control. Who's really manipulating who now?" The next day, he found out his design submission for an upcoming project in Lisbon had been withdrawn. Confused, he called the organizers. "We received a cancellation request from your agency," they said. David didn't have an agency. He checked his email and found nothing. Then he checked the shared drive he once gave Elena access to. Back when she helped manage his calendar, it was empty, files gone, renderings missing, shared folders deleted. She had access, she had motive, and now she had leverage. He called Ava. "It's not just about guilt anymore," he said. "She's interfering with my work." Ava didn't hesitate. "You need to change all your passwords. Now phone, email, banking, everything." He already had. But it wasn't enough, because Elena didn't need to control him through his files anymore. She was controlling him through his fear. Back at the hotel, he received an email. No subject line, just an attachment. He opened it. It was a voice memo Elena had once recorded and sent him months ago. One of those late-night affirmations. "I love you because you don't quit, even when it hurts. I love you because you let me in, and I'll never leave, even if you push.
I will always find my way back to you. She had resent it now. On purpose. It wasn't sweet anymore. It was a warning. David pressed play again. And listened this time not with his heart, but with clarity. The message wasn't about him. It was about her. Her control. Her ownership. Her rules. That night, David met Ava for dinner. She had flown in for a different conference. And when she saw him, her face tightened. "You look like hell?" He laughed. "That's because I feel like hell." They sat in a small corner of a tapas bar, warm light flickering against red wine glasses. "I thought distance would break her hold," he said. "But she's still inside everything, every file, every memory." Ava leaned forward. "David, people like Elena don't let go because you ask. They only let go when you stop being useful." David was silent. "She's a psychological architect," Ava continued. "And she designed a version of you that can't function without her permission." He took a long breath. "Then I have to demolish that version." That night, he pulled out his sketchbook and started from scratch. New lines, new space, new intention. A building that didn't rely on symmetry. A form that broke its own rules. He worked until morning. And when the sun rose, he realized something. He hadn't once thought of Elena's opinion. Chapter 6, Public Display. Logan International Airport was buzzing when David landed. He moved through the crowd in silence, bag slung over his shoulder, phone on airplane mode. He hadn't opened any of Elena's messages since Madrid. He wasn't ready. He thought she'd be at the apartment, waiting, maybe crying, maybe angry, but still there. She wasn't. The apartment was cold, clean, empty. Half the closet was cleared, the bathroom shelf stripped, even the coffee beans they used to argue over, gone. On the table sat a single envelope. No name, just a clean white fold. Inside was a handwritten note. "You made your choice. I'm just making mine. E, no threats, no tears." But the finality of it hit him harder than any confrontation ever could. The next day, the fallout began. It started on LinkedIn. An anonymous post on a public architecture forum claimed David had stolen collaborative work from a nonprofit design initiative. Vaguely worded, but with just enough insinuation to raise eyebrows. Then a tweet from an anonymous account. "Some men only rise by stepping on the women who built them." No names, no direct accusations. But the message was clear. And the timing, undeniable. By noon, David had 3 emails from former clients asking if everything was okay. By nightfall, he was trending in a niche community he never wanted to be famous in. He called Ava. She's not even denying it. She's just implying things, letting people connect the dots she drew in chalk. Ava was blunt. "This is strategic. You left her. Now she's rewriting the story before you can." That evening, he received a voice message from Marla, the same woman who had hinted at his recklessness during that quiet dinner weeks before. "Hey, David. Just wanted to say I hope you're doing okay. There's a lot being said. Elena's hurting. I think she's just trying to process it the only way she knows how." David stared at the message. Process? This wasn't grief, it was theater. And he was the villain in a story she was now directing alone. He tried to defend himself. He posted a brief statement. "To those who've seen rumors, none of it is true. I've always done my work with integrity. And if anyone needs to speak directly, my door is open." It was dignified, calm. But in a world trained to smell blood, calm is weakness. The silence after his post was louder than the noise before it. Then the real blow came. He was removed from the Lisbon project, officially this time. No explanation, just a formal notice. "We've decided to move in a different direction." His name was now a risk, not because he had done anything, but because someone whispered just enough to make people wonder. He went to Ava's apartment that night. Rain soaked his hoodie. He didn't speak when she opened the door. She just let him in. No questions. They sat in silence, two bottles of wine, one sketchbook between them. "Why does it still hurt?" he asked eventually. "I know what she did. I see it now. But part of me still wonders if I failed her somehow." Ava looked at him. "Because that's what she trained you to do, to turn your pain into apology." He nodded slowly. "I don't want to be this version of myself anymore." "Then shed him," Ava said, "brick by brick." The next morning, he started to rebuild. He called his old mentor, Professor Keyes, and explained everything. Keyes didn't hesitate. "You're not the first person to go through this," he said. "You just made the mistake of loving someone who needed your collapse to prove their worth." David asked, "And how do I come back from this?" Keyes was quiet for a moment. "You don't come back. You evolve, quietly, powerfully. And next time, you recognize control before it dresses itself in love." That afternoon, David changed his phone number. He deleted the shared cloud accounts. He hired a digital privacy firm to secure his documents, emails, passwords. And then he called a lawyer. Not because he wanted revenge, but because he finally understood that survival required boundaries backed by law. That night, as the city lights hummed outside his window, David opened a blank sketchbook. No lines, no borrowed voices, just a pen, a quiet room, and the truth. He wrote two words across the first page: "My version, chapter 7, the last version." David didn't expect the knock. It was early, barely 8 a.m., and the city was still rubbing its eyes. He was sipping bitter coffee on his balcony, wrapped in a hoodie, trying to breathe without bracing for the next ambush. But the knock was insistent, not angry, not frantic, just certain. He opened the door. It was Elena. She wore no makeup, no jewelry, no mask, just a navy coat and silence in her eyes. David didn't move. "I came to say goodbye," she said. He stepped aside, wordless. She walked in like she still remembered where everything belonged. But now, everything had been moved. They sat across from each other at the kitchen table, the same table where she once whispered, "I believe in you." The same table where he once believed her. "You've made your statement," David said. "Publicly, privately, politically. I think I've earned some clarity now." Elena tilted her head. "You left me. You erased me," he shot back. Her voice remained steady. "You stopped listening." "I started thinking," he replied. "You said you loved me, but what you really loved was your reflection in my obedience." For the first time, her face cracked, only slightly. "You made me feel disposable," she said. David leaned forward. "Number, you made me disposable. And when I chose myself, you spun a version of me that the world would fear instead of love, because it was the only way to stay the victim." Her jaw clenched. "You were always good with words," she said. "Always the architect. Even now. You're building a version of this that fits your guilt." He shook his head. "Number, I'm building the truth. You use loyalty as currency. You built a world where love came with clauses. And when I stopped paying, you called it betrayal." She sat in silence. No apology, no denial. Just a stare that said, "You finally get it." David stood. "I'm not going to drag your name through the mud. I won't play your game." Elena rose too. "And if I don't stop?" "You already lost," he said quietly. "Because no matter what story you tell, you'll always know the truth." Her voice turned icy. "And what truth is that?" David stepped closer. "That I would have stayed. If it had ever really been love, She didn't cry. Elena never cried. She walked to the door, then paused with her hand on the frame. "You think you're free now?" she asked. He didn't answer. She didn't wait. The door closed gently behind her. David stood in that silence for a long time. Then he exhaled, not in relief, not in triumph, but in rebirth. Over the next few months, he moved differently. He took smaller projects. He reconnected with friends. He saw Ava more, never as a replacement, but as someone who reminded him of who he'd been before he got lost in someone else's version of love. He didn't talk about Elena, not much, not with bitterness, only with facts, because the story didn't belong to her anymore. One afternoon, while clearing his studio shelves, he found the first sketch she ever complimented, a brutalist staircase open to light. He studied it, ran his fingers along the pencil lines. Then, smiling softly, he ripped it in half. A year later, he opened his own design firm. The tagline on the front page of his new website was simple, "Build without permission." And under that, David Rains, architect, survivor, unfinished by design.